This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
June 1763. A warm afternoon in the English market town of Shepton Mallet. An old man sits in a chair outside his sister's cottage. He's completely paralyzed, hasn't walked in years. Farm workers turn hay in the field just yards away. Travelers pass on the turnpike road. His sister goes upstairs to change the bedding. 15 minutes, maybe 30. When she comes back down, the chair is there. His coat is there, but her brother? Gone. No footprints, no cry for help, no trace. His name was Owen Parfitt, and for 260 years, no one, not investigators, not historians, not even Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the creator of Sherlock Holmes, has been able to explain what happened to him. Hello, friend. Welcome to the Haunted Bunker, where mysteries hide. I'm Shane Waters. Kim's joining me in the bunker tonight, while Josh is away. We're traveling back to 18th century England for one of the most baffling vanishings ever recorded. All right, friend. It's time to descend. We're going across the Atlantic to a market town in southwest England, 1763. The town of Shepton Mallet, Somerset. A paralyzed man sat in a chair outside his sister's cottage. Farm workers labored in the field just yards away. When she came back downstairs minutes later, her brother was gone. Just his coat remained. Owen Parfitt was never seen again. It's been over 260 years. His body has never been found. And to this day, no one knows what happens. I have a feeling he's not coming back alive.
It doesn't sound that way, no.
Picture it. Shampton Mallet.
Sicily.
In the mid-1700s, a cloth town. Don't you just love that word? A cloth town. It's prosperous. Okay. Around 4,000 to 5,000 people packed into narrow, dirty streets. Some 50 mills churned along the river Shippy, turning wool into wealth. The Mendip Hills, boy, I wish Josh was here, the Mendip. The Mendip Hills rolled to the north. The Glastonbury legendary site of Avalon and King Arthur's burial lay just 5 miles away. This was ancient country, the kind of place where old stories ran deep in the soil. Owen Parfitt was born here around 1699 to a tailor named John Parfitt and his wife Martha Tucker. By all accounts, Owen was apprenticed to his father's trade. He was supposed to sit there sewing all day long. But Owen, as it turned out, hated sitting still.
I would have loved that.
As long as you could crochet.
Well, I mean, I don't even mind sewing. I like to sew, too. Oh.
On one morning, his stool waited for him in vain. Word came that he'd enlisted under the king's banner. And for the next several decades, only rumors filtered back through peddlers and old soldiers. Owen had been seen at this battle or that in America and Africa. The tales were wild. Piracy, smuggling, banditry, black magic in the West Indies, romancing women across fur-flung colonies.
Oh my.
Hoo-hoo. It sounds like Kim's kind of man.
No, I wouldn't do fur or something. Oh.
The kind of stories that grow each time it's told. And Owen, when he finally came home, an old man, broken and bent with wounds and rheumatism, he loved nothing more than telling those stories to anyone who'd listen. The problem is, no one could verify any of it. Were these tales of adventure and sin true? Or had Owen Parfitt simply spun himself a colorful past to entertain the neighbors? We'll never know. But what those stories would later do, what they'd be used to explain, that will matter. Here's what we do know. When Owen returned to Shepton Mallet, which is probably a place that I'm not even pronouncing right.
Probably not.
He moved in with his elderly sister, Mary. He was unrecognizable to everyone but her. He was gray-haired, about 5'7", stout, and completely, utterly broken. It sounds like about every man that every one of my female friends are dating right now. Whether it was a massive stroke or progressive rheumatism, the result was the same. Owen Parfitt couldn't walk. Not without a stick in one hand and another person's arm to lean on. For the last 6 months of his known life, he was what witnesses would later describe as a complete cripple. None of them had seen him on his feet or even attempting to use them for years. Two women cared for him, his sister Mary, who was in her 80s and quite feeble herself, but kept the cleanest cottage in town. And a neighbor named Susanna Snook, who lived about 50 yards away and was hired to help move Owen when needed. Their routine was simple. On fine days, Mary and Susanna would carry Owen along the passage to a chair outside the front door. They'd settle him there, prop him on his folded greatcoat, and let him sit in the sun while Mary went upstairs to clean his room and change the bedding. That's what they did on a warm June day in 1763. Or maybe 1768. I found several different sources that gave both years. So there's a it's a 5 year difference. But 1763 or 1768.
Maybe it was both.
But the years matter less than what happened next. Picture it. A fine afternoon. Warm enough that they brought him outside. Across the road in Joseph George's field, farm workers were poking the hay. I believe that's how, isn't that what they would say? Poking the hay?
I have no idea. I'm not a farmer.
It's when you would turn it with pitchfork so it would dry evenly. Mm-hmm. The turnpike road ran past with the occasional cart or horseman. This wasn't some isolated cottage. People were everywhere. Mary and Susanna settled Owen in his chair. Susanna walked the 50 yards back to her home. Mary climbed the stairs to clean her brother's room. 15 minutes passed, maybe 30. When Mary came back down, Owen was gone. His chair sat exactly where they'd left it. His greatcoat hung on the back, or it was folded where it was placed. The accounts vary. But Owen Parfitt vanished. No trace, no sound, nothing. The farm workers across the road had seen nothing unusual. The travelers on the turnpike had noticed nothing strange. A paralyzed man who couldn't walk had simply disappeared from his chair in broad daylight. Yards from witnesses and left no evidence behind. And then, almost immediately, a storm broke. Witnesses described it as terrible, lightning and thunder suddenly bursting over the board cross, as if nature itself had something to say about what had just happened. The search was exhaustive. Despite the storm, people searched through the night and into the next day. Every wood, ditch, pond, and well for miles around. Nothing. And here's where it gets strange or stranger. There was no formal investigation at the time. No notes taken. No witness statements recorded. The police, such as they were, did nothing. Owen Parfitt had simply vanished. and everyone moved on. Except they didn't forget. The stories persisted, and chief among them was the explanation that made the most sense to the people of that era. Mary Parfitt, Owen's own sister, always maintained that her brother had been carried off by the devil in payment for his previous life of wickedness.
Oh my.
You better be careful, Ken.
No kidding. The
devil's coming down from Georgia.
That is no kidding.
Looking for a soul to steal. Now, before you dismiss that as superstition, understand this. The neighbors agreed with her. The general opinion in Shepton Mallet at the time of the disappearance was that Owen had been taken by demons. This wasn't a theory that developed decades later. It wasn't paranormal researchers adding supernatural elements to a mundane crime. This was the immediate contemporary explanation. Owen's tale of black magic in the West Indies, his admitted sense of piracy and womanizing, the sudden terrible storm that broke the moment he vanished, it all fit together in the minds of his neighbors. And there's one more detail. Shortly before he disappeared, Owen had asked a witness's father to partake of the sacrament with him, as if he knew something was coming, as if he wanted to make peace before it did. And then 50 years passed. In 1813, a man named Thomas Henry Strode was making alterations to a property at Board Cross, again 50 years later, about 120 yards from where Owen had vanished. Workers discovered a human skeleton sealed inside a stone garden wall. The town erupted. Had they finally found Owen Parfitt? A doctor named Butler, who would later become the Bishop of Lichfield, examined the remains. The skeleton was that of a young woman, not Owen. But the discovery sparked something else. A local attorney named William Maskell decided to conduct a proper investigation. Nearly 50 years after the disappearance, he tracked down surviving witnesses and collected formal statements. What he found wasn't clarity, it was contradiction. The witnesses couldn't agree on basic facts. Some said Mary heard a loud noise and found the chair knocked over. Others, specifically Savannah Snook, the neighbor who was the last person to see Owen alive, empathetically denied this. She insisted Mary had expressly said she heard no noise and the chair was exactly as they'd left it. Why would Susanna lie? Or was someone else lying? Maskell noted in his investigation that the witnesses were prone to contradict themselves and each other in almost every matter of fact. Dr. Butler asked a specific question during the investigation. Was Owen actually capable of walking at all? There was a rumor that someone matching his description had been seen wandering near the Frome, 10 or 12 miles away, on the evening of his disappearance. They investigated. The person near Frome didn't match Owen's description at all. Another dead end. Another theory that dissolved under examination.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
In 1933, construction work in the area of Board Cross prompted new excavations. People searched again, hoping modern methods might find what their predecessors had missed. Nothing. No new evidence, no clues. Owen Parfitt remained as vanished as he'd ever been. Today, the primary source documents, Maskell's annotated investigation, the transcribed witness statements, correspondence about the case, sit in the archives of Downside Abbey, a Benedictine monastery near Shepton Mallet. A monk named Dom Ethelbert Horn added extensive documentation over the years, including maps showing where the cottage likely stood. It's the closest anyone has ever come to unraveling the mystery, and it's not very close at all. So what happened to Owen Parfitt?
That's a good question.
The rational explanation is murder. Owen's murky past, whether real or imagined, suggested he had made enemies. Old associates from his pirating days. If those days were real, they might have come looking for him. He was observed going periodically to Bristol and returning with money. That suggests he maintained connections to something or someone. If Owen was murdered, someone on the inside would have needed to be involved. The contradictions in Susanna Snook's testimony are genuinely suspicious. Why did she so firmly deny that Mary heard a noise or found the chair displaced when another witness claimed the opposite? What did she know that she wasn't saying? But murder doesn't explain how a paralyzed man could be abducted in broad daylight, yards from farm workers and a busy road, without anyone seeing or hearing anything. The supernatural explanation that Owen was claimed by demonic forces was believed by his own family and neighbors at the time it happened. The storm, the black magic, the sacrament he requested before he vanished. To people in 1763, it made perfect sense. And there's a third possibility that no one likes to discuss. That the disappearance never happened the way it was remembered. That details shifted over the 50 years between the event and the first formal investigation. That folklore simply grew around an old man who died unremarkably and became something more in the retelling. Multiple witnesses confirmed Owen's existence. Men still owned clothes he made as a tailor. The investigation found real people with real memories, even if those memories contradicted each other. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the creator of Sherlock Holmes, once wrote that Owen Parfitt's case forms one of the most poignant mysteries which ever came before the British public. If the man who invented the world's greatest detective couldn't solve it, maybe we're not meant to. The exact location of the Parfitt cottage is documented in the Downside Abbey archives, but it's not a tourist site. There's no plaque, no memorial, just the knowledge that somewhere near where the fire and the ambulance stations now stand, on what was once the old Wells Turnpike Road, a paralyzed man vanished from a chair in 1763. He was about 70 years old. He'd lived a life that was either extraordinary or ordinary, depending on which stories you believe. And on a June afternoon, with farm workers yards away and his sister just upstairs, he simply ceased to exist. The chair was there. His coat was there. Owen Parfitt was not. Some mysteries aren't meant to be solved. They're meant to be felt. A chair, a coat, a man who disappeared between one moment and the next, leaving nothing but questions that have lasted 260 years. What do you think happened? What do you think happened, Kim?
I don't know.
You don't have any theory?
I could be a real biznatch and say that he decided he was like a dog and he went off and died.
I mean, I think it's a good theory because whether the wild tales of his life were true or untrue, if they were fabricated or accurate, he may not have wanted just to die a normal death and wanted like this mysterious death. I mean, because we're here in 2025 talking about it, and he might have wanted that. Maybe he craved that attention, and he knew like, hey, if I could, maybe he wasn't really paralyzed.
Maybe.
And he just wanted to get away, and he knew that he could further his tale. And yeah. But I mean, if he commits suicide, then clearly he couldn't have been paralyzed. But the issue, I think, with all of it is that none of the farm workers and his sister would have seen it unless they were all involved. Because they would have seen him skedaddle.
I don't know. It's weird.
It is very weird.
Very strange.
Very strange indeed. All right. Are you ready for my ship fire story?
Oh, yes.
All right. Today's story, we're traveling to Ashland, Virginia, November 2025, Black Friday weekend.
Oh, boy.
Now, in Virginia, the liquor stores are actually ran by the state. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
They're called ABC stores. It stands for, and I didn't write this down, but I know, I think that I know, it's called like Alcohol Beverage Company or something. Alcoholic Beverage. Why don't you look it up? ABC stores. Alcoholic Beverage.
I would think that it would be company.
While you're looking it up, I'll continue. But anyway, it's very official. It's very buttoned up. The state of Virginia runs it. The one in Ashland is like all the others. It has fluorescent lights, bottles lined up nice on the shelves. It closes up every night, opens back up in the morning. Nothing exciting ever happens here.
It's Alcoholic Beverage Control Store.
There you go. That's an ABC.
Okay. We were close.
Yes. But this particular Friday night, this night was different.
Black Friday.
Around 9 o'clock, after the store had been closed, all the lights were off, the doors locked. Something fell through the ceiling tiles. Shit fire. That's when it happened. Whatever came through that ceiling made its way to the bottom shelf, the whiskey section.
I know what you're talking about.
Started knocking bottles down one by one, smashing them. 14 bottles total. Scotch, whiskey, peanut butter whiskey.
Peanut butter whiskey?
$250 worth of liquor. Mercy. Just pooling on the floor. And the store doesn't open again until Saturday morning. So nobody knows of any of this. Well, the next morning, Animal Control gets the call. Officer Samantha Martin walks in, sees the broken glass, sees the trail, and follows it all the way to the bathroom. And there on the floor, right next to the toilet, shit fire and save the matches. It's a raccoon. Passed out cold. Mm-hmm. Whiskey drunk.
I've seen this on the news.
Just absolutely gone.
I was cracking up. The pictures of it just like spraddled out. I was cracking up.
Well, the sheriff's office responded with a gif of Simon Cowell clapping. Virginia ABC released 3 cocktail recipes in his honor.
Oh, that was nice.
One of them was called the Trash Panda Old Fashioned. And the shelter started selling t-shirts. They named the raccoon Cole. C-O-L-E. And they brought him back to the shelter.
Talk about a great way to make money.
No kidding.
T-shirts.
They eventually did release him back into the wild, and no one pressed charges.
Once he sobered up?
Yes. But I thought that was just such a cute story.
Poor guy. I feel bad for him. I guess that'll teach him to break into a liquor store, won't it?
It. Yes. And I also love the fact that somewhere in Virginia right now, there's a raccoon who once broke into a liquor store, got drunk, got caught, got arrested, and got away with it without getting charged. But he did get locked up for a short period of time.
I mean, who in the world's going to charge a raccoon?
Right. Well, he did get locked up for a minute.
Well, that was for his own safety.
That was for his own safety.
Poor kid.
All right, guys. Well, don't forget to catch us over on our bonus episode, which we are going to be right there, right after this.
Well, and, you know, people might just now realize that Josh isn't here.
No. I guess I forgot.
Yeah. I'm just kind of
just so quiet.
Yeah. Well, it is quiet.
Well, we're glad that you're here, Kim.
No, thanks.
Good to see you. Don't forget to mail us a postcard at P.O. Box 690 in Wabash, Indiana, 46992. That's also written in the show notes. You can find it there. Send us a postcard.
Absolutely.
You can also send us non-poisonous sealed snacks.
Non-poisonous.
And we can try them on the air. That would be wonderful. We like to try new things.
It's true. Definitely.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will see you over on Unmasked right after this. We'll see you there. We'll meet you there. We'll be right there.
Bye.
Bye. A chair, a coat, a man who simply ceased to exist. Owen Parfitt was about 70 years old when he vanished from that chair. A paralyzed former soldier, or pirate, or smuggler, depending on who you believe. Who couldn't take a single step without help. Yet somehow, in broad daylight, with farm workers in the field and travelers on the road, he disappeared without a trace. His own sister believed the devil came to collect him. The neighbors agreed. And maybe they were right. Or maybe Owen finally found a way home. Or maybe Owen finally found a way to become the mystery he'd spent his whole life telling, the ultimate legend for a man who loved to spin them. 260 years later, the question remains, what really happened in Shepton Mallet that June afternoon? Some mysteries aren't meant to be solved. They're meant to be felt. The lights are dimming, the bunker door is closing. But the mysteries, they're just getting started. I'm Shane Waters. Stay curious, stay skeptical, and stay a little bit scared. Good night, friend.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.